Good morning, and thank you for joining us on another episode of the Roundtable Talk Show with Sharifa Hardy. And every Monday, we have Allison Allman. She is joining us here today. We have so much to learn. We have two guests today, so we're going to spend a little bit of extra time diving into who they are, what they do, and sharing it with you. But before we introduce our guests, I'm going to ask you to do what I always ask you to do, and that is to be a part of the show. Don't just watch the show. Don't sit on the side of the pool. Get in the water, swim, comment, share. Be a guest on the show. Join the conversation, because we want America, we want the world to be a better place. We want you to learn from our entrepreneurs. We want you to learn from our guests. And change starts with the conversation, and change starts with you. So while you're sharing the show, I'm going to go ahead and introduce our first guest. And she is someone I'm definitely sure you tuned in to see. She always brings her own fan base to support her and to cheer her on. Good morning to Allison Allman, the organization Maven. How are you today?
Good morning, Ms. Sharifa. It's Monday, and it's very exciting that I'm here. I just really enjoy being here. I love my followers and my friends that tune in and anyone that watches on the replay. I'm so excited. It's Monday.
Excited too. You got your Monday energy going. I can already feel it. She's like, Sharifa. Yes. Yes. Now, for those people who have been hiding under a rock who may not have heard of you so far, tell us a little bit about yourself, Allison.
So I'm the organization Maven. I come in and I help overwhelmed and busy individuals that don't have time to clear the clutter in their house, or their garage, or their home office, or their work office. So I come in and I organize and I sort and I purge and I make it a functional space so that people can feel good at the end of the day. Most of my clients, they have a room or their garage that they just keep the doors closed and ignore it. They can't handle it. They have so much else going on in their life that just going into that space makes them overwhelmed, makes them anxious, makes them, they don't know where to start. So I kind of just come in with an action plan and wham, bam it out in 1 to 2 sessions and just do it all for them. I purge out the stuff that isn't needed, and I can usually tell by how, you know, dusty the item is, or if it's broken, or, you know, people have high ideas to fix something and it just never happens. So I just clear it out for them, put it in my pickup truck, donate it, trash it, whatever's needed. And then they can go into that space and it's all completed. And so I just really, really, really love helping people. With kids going back to school, there's a lot of trends of making distance learning spaces, and there's these things called mom caves, and I'm really excited about it. We're used to man caves where they have couches and sports center on, and so now mom caves or she set sheds or woman caves is where moms can escape from their kids after the day of distance learning and feeding and taking care of everyone. They go into their space, which is either a craft room or a place where they can watch, you know, Real Housewives, and they have a wine fridge and they have a furry carpet on the floor. And it sounds so fun, but it's like, I want to do a mom cave now. So I'm hunting to organize a mom cave just so I can have cool pictures and help other moms. Cause all it takes is one mom to be like, I want a mom cave. Can you come over and do that? I'll be like, yes, we get to do a man cave. And then, I mean, a mom cave, and then everyone else will want a mom cave.
You know what I love about it is one of the things that we've been discussing during this epidemic is that there have been more millionaires created during recessions than any other time in history. And so just like now, people are trying to figure out a way how to manage. When you have people who are not used to all being in the home together, you have to find a space for anyone, everyone. Because if you don't, it's going to be chaos and anarchy. Everybody is running all over the place. So I love the idea of what is it called? A woman's cave?
Yeah. How it's trending through hashtags is a woman cave or a mom cave. Because okay. Most wives that I guess aren't moms, they don't have anything to escape from.
Okay. Yes, they do. I don't care what it is. We still have a lot to escape from. But everybody wants that unique little space that is all theirs, you know. And so I think it's a wonderful idea. And what I love is that every day, every show, you have something new. Last week, we talked about more about your SEO, things that you were doing to your website, how you saw a need for garage organizers, and you took that direction and you implemented it in your business and in your marketing. And now we're seeing you do the same thing with the she sheds and the mom caves. Did you make any changes to your SEO? Do you do that every time you go in a different direction?
Well, last week I touched a little bit about some Pinterest marketing and how I was trying this new tactic. And so I'm still implementing it and testing it out. So what I've done is I saw it was trending on Pinterest, which was the mom caves. And so then now I'm following people that have mom caves and I'm doing pins that have mom caves. So my reach has gone higher on Pinterest because I'm pinning what's trending. And that also kind of gave me a lot of insights, because then when I went into the moms groups, all the moms are talking about how they want to pull their hair out and how they are home all day with their kids and they don't have any alone time. So now I'm just, like I said, I'm eager to be like, I haven't done a mom cave yet. I've done kind of everything else. So I'm not worried that I have, because I haven't done it, I don't know how to do it. It's more of like, now it's like, oh, I get to do something new and kind of focus on it for a bit. So that's kind of what I'm doing right now, is focusing all my efforts on Pinterest and then just waiting to have that opportunity to do it so that then I can put it on Instagram with the before and after pictures. And I'll probably do a before and after picture through Pinterest, because there's a lot of before and after pictures there. So I've kind of just focused all my efforts the past week and a half to 2 weeks all on Pinterest, growing my reach, trending, doing the marketing tactic that I learned a couple weeks ago, and kind of just going from there. It's just something new. I was never really a Pinterest person. So this is all kind of new waters for me.
Well, we love when you go in new waters, because then I get to pick your brain and find out what's in that water without having to get bitten by a shark. So thank you for doing that for me, Allison. But with Pinterest, do you find that you receive a global, international, or national reach, as opposed to just looking for people in Orange County?
Well, I'm working on adding the shopping feature through my Pinterest. And so I'm going to start highlighting bins and things, not so much to purchase from me, but for people to start purchasing bins. And then they're going to need me to organize. I'm not really thinking on a global level at this point. I'm honing in on just the Southern California region. I'm still building that presence where I want to be known as an expert in my area. So I figure once everyone starts talking about me here, then I could ripple out. That's kind of been my game plan, is I want to be known. I want to just focus. I mean, just in my area alone, there's 92,000 garages in like the cities right around my city. So I want to focus on organizing those 92,000 before I expand out to, you know, different areas of my area. So I mean, 92,000 is well enough for me. Like, I'm totally happy with that 92,000.
She's like, I'm not greedy. I have 92,000. But no, let me rephrase the question. When using Pinterest, are you able to focus on that area, that 92,000, or does it have a global reach?
Oh, I've been using, I've been following the women in the area. Like when I search pins, I'm setting the parameters to hit Southern California. That way someone from Finland doesn't call me and be like, hey, I'm ready to do a mom cave. And I'm going to go, well, my plane trip ticket.
That's all you do. That's not how you solve that problem. You just include airfare. But these are things, and that's again why I love having you on the show, because these are things that are so simple to you. Like, you just do it. You just figure it out. We're a lot alike. That's why we're on this, you know, journey together. But people who are tuning in, people who are watching, they may not even understand how Pinterest works. You know, how do you follow the trends? Do you log in all day, every day? Do you have an app that sends you trends? Is it just, you know, your specific industry that you're watching the trends? How do you find out what's trending on Pinterest and the best way to allow it to benefit you?
It's a mixture. So Pinterest is very similar to Facebook, that once you start pinning stuff, then it will show you other pins. Just like when you get onto Facebook and you search something, then you see an ad for whatever you just searched for. They're all connected one way or another through Facebook and all that marketing. But what I've been doing is mostly just listening and what's happening in the other meetings I go to, like the different Zoom meetings I go to with realtors. They're talking about the mom caves. And then I'm in the Facebook mom groups, and you know, they're talking about distance learning and everything. So from there, after I've listened to them, then I go into Pinterest and I just start pinning. That way, those moms that I just saw complaining about distance learning can see that I can do a distance learning room or something to that effect. Like, I'm getting it by, I guess, crowdsourcing, is that the correct term? By just listening to people around me and then going into Pinterest. And then once I start pinning something, then Pinterest is like, oh, here's some more ideas since you just pinned this. And then it kind of just grows from there. And then, so my main feed on Pinterest is all mixed up because I pin a lot of random things.
I love random. Very interesting. What are you seeing as far as the trends on how someone can get organized for the home learning, for the homeschooling?
So I saw this really cute idea that showed one of those poster boards that when we used to do science experiments, where it has the poster boards and the two sides, how you can put one of those on a dining room table, so that a kid won't be distracted by the other people at the table. So for people that are in small spaces and only have a dining room table to do all their distance learning on, but then one person's like, well, that person is slouching, or, you know, mom, that person's touching me. So with that poster board being in front of them, they have all their schoolwork in front of them and there's no distractions. So then you can have two to four, maybe six people at the same table, just using that poster board that folds like you're doing a science experiment. And once I saw that, I went right away. Once someone shared that tip of what they're doing, I went right to Pinterest and I started pinning all of these little distance learning like hacks, so to speak, because I was like, wow, that's cool. If I needed that, I'd be doing that.
If I needed that. So it's basically like little cubicles. You make a table into little cubicles, so each one has their own space. That is wonderful, because one of the things that we have learned is that not everyone learns the same. Not everybody, you know, you have to find a space for everyone. So that's what you're doing on the table, and that's what you're doing in these mom sheds or mom caves. I love it. I always love having you as a guest on the show. Now, of course, I'm going to come back to you, Allison, but I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, who is also amazing. We're going to learn more about her today. We're going to talk about diabetes health in America, but we're also going to talk about her organization. She is the founder of Plan. Good morning to Marcy Keenan. How are you today?
I am awake, Sharifa. I've been awake since about 5 this morning. So my day started out in Central Park, which is right across the street from me. And I walked 7 miles, but I had to pick up a banner this morning. And so I walked 20 more blocks, pick up the banner. And then I walked to my church where I just posted the banner. So that's part of my marketing. We don't forget street marketing. And when you have a church that is on a major street right near 125th Street in the heart of Harlem, putting up a big banner for the next 6 to 8 weeks is a wonderful way to let the community know that we have these online classes that are starting in September. And we have them in both Spanish and English. And we're looking for at-risk people at risk of developing type 2 diabetes, working with them to reverse that course. So we also are doing it not only in Spanish and English, but Medicaid, New York State, is covering the cost of this program for the underserved community here. And that's huge. So I'm trying to let as many people know as possible about that.
Well, wonderful. We're going to help you get the word out. One of the things that's interesting, I love how you came on, you said, I'm awake. And I think you're the first person in New York who said that on the show. I get that all the time from people here in California with me. They're like, I'm up. It's 7 o'clock, Sharifa. I'm here. You know what I mean? It's early. Why did you have this show at 8 o'clock in the morning? I'm like, because I wanted to get up, get the day started, and bring you information and educate you in the morning so you can start your day. So educate us. What does PLAN stand for?
Preventive Lifestyle Assistance Network. Mm-hmm. And basically, I'm a certified fitness trainer, as well as a certified diabetes prevention program certified lifestyle coach. I started out in 2012. I was, I'd gone for a routine examination. I was living in Las Vegas at the time. And when I went back to get my results, the follow-up, the doctor told me I was pre-diabetic. And I was quite surprised. You know, I'd heard your vitamin D is low. That had been something that I had to deal with. And my cholesterol level was always great. And I'm working out, you know what I mean? But I can't claim that I was always eating healthfully. As long as I looked good, you know, I'm working out, I'm burning calories, I'm spinning like a mad woman. So I could kind of eat what I wanted to. And this woman tells me this, and she's a bit dramatic because it's really, you know, the scale is, I believe it's 5.7 to 6.4 A1C. And I was at like 5.7 or 8, something like that. And, but this particular doctor was very diligent with this because she had lost her mom and her grandmother, who were both double amputees.
Wow.
And they died of complications related to type 2 diabetes. Hence her vigilance. Okay. Mm-hmm. So even though I'm going, come on, I'm at the low end, blah, blah, blah. 50% of pre-diabetics become type 2 diabetics, okay? Diabetes is a disease that affects every organ of your body, right? Skin is an organ, you know, the nerves. People have a lot of problems with their feet because the nerves are dead. The cells are dead in the nerves. So people can nick themselves, cut themselves and not know it. And as a result, get an infection. And these infections, I just had a friend of mine, I had him on a show. In fact, he nearly lost his big toe. You know, he's been battling diabetes for 15 years. I didn't even know he was diabetic. And they literally had wheeled him into the operating room. This is a vibrant young man. He does a reality show. He's a music producer. And he's been watching what he eats and, you know, different things, but they did one last test before taking him in, and there was some circulation going to that toe that stopped the process. But there are people who do lose their limbs. I had a doctor speak to my people. I do an online diabetes course. As you know, everything is shut down. We're opening up in New York, but I noticed when I was doing the marketing to try to open up an in-person diabetes prevention class, all I could think of for marketing was making sure people knew they were safe. You know, that marketing now. So I'm, you know, we're going to be doing temperature checks, and as opposed to having it in the deacon's room this time, we're going to have it in the youth church. And then I went in there and I, you know, thought how many people I could fit in here. And so it adds a whole nother layer to your business. I understand why some of these businesses are struggling. So so Medicaid then came forward because they weren't paying for any new classes. If you had started an in-person class, once Medicaid kicked in, if you had someone who had Medicaid, they would pay for it. But they weren't starting, they weren't paying for any new classes, right? Because there's really, the issue is they have a lot of data. There was a big pilot done by the YMCA around the country, about 175 of their locations, did a pilot of the CDC's National Diabetes Prevention Program. No one had statistics on how well it would work with distant learning. So they weren't willing to pay for that. Medicare wouldn't pay for that. But once this pandemic hit, a lot of the people, smaller community organizations, stopped doing it. And even though they were offering, they were even getting some of the large organizations to help people to get online, because you have to have, my Zoom is HIPAA compliant. My email address is HIPAA compliant. My fax is HIPAA compliant. You can't just go on anything. If I record something, I have to do it on my computer. I can't do it on my iPad, you follow. So there's a lot of regulations with working with government agencies, which can be daunting for smaller companies like mine. So anyways, a lot of people stopped doing it. I was doing an assessment. Every 6 months, we have to give data anonymously to the CDC. So I was having the evaluation, and the woman was very excited that we transitioned, because I was already doing one cohort online. So I had an in-person cohort at my church. I had one online. When things were going south in March, I just told my people, listen, we're going to start doing it online. And everyone transitioned. So it was smooth for us. But anyway, so Medicaid now says, just literally about a month or so ago, okay, we'll pay for new cohorts that are being done distant learning. And just to give you an idea of how they differentiate the terminology, I say I'm doing it online. Well, online in that world means I'm sending Sharifa the class, you know, a module. I'm just sending it to you, expecting you to do it and get it back to me. That's online. As opposed to Sharifa and Allison are joining me on Tuesday night from 6 to 7 p.m. for this class. So there's a difference there in that world. So they would pay for distant learning, meaning like we're together right now, if we were doing a class, they would pay for this. They would not pay for Sharifa sending me something to do online without the lifestyle coach or instructor being involved. Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense, and it's very interesting. We went in a lot of different directions. I want to go back to something you said initially, that you went to the doctor and the doctor was adamant that you do something because she had lost her grandmother and she had lost her mother. What did you decide to do?
Actually, what I did, I took at the library, they were having a diabetes management program. Mm-hmm. So now again, I think of myself as someone, I lived in California. And you guys may take it for granted, but California is a very different area than a New York when it comes to health. So I'm at the Marina Athletic Club. I'm doing master cleanses. You know what I mean?
Yes.
I also am sober. So, you know, I don't drink or take any other mind altering substances, obviously, but the sugar. Mm-hmm. That's a mind altering substance. Okay. Yes.
There's diabetes in a can. You get you a cola or something. That's what I always say. Diabetes in a cup. That's one of the worst.
Yeah. And what's really one of the worst are the hidden mm-hmm. sugar that people don't even think. What? That has sugar in it? That has sugar? Yeah, it has sugar in it. And you don't think about it when you're using ketchup and different things like that, right?
Right.
So anyways, I took a 6-week course that was being offered, a husband and wife. The wife was actually, I think they both were type 1, which is a whole nother ball game. You know, those mm-hmm. people produce insulin. So they have to take insulin. Mm-hmm. Type 2 diabetes is a lifestyle disease, like a lot of the chronic diseases. Change your lifestyle, you can reverse these diseases. It's not a to the grave disease. If you're willing to make the changes, the huge changes, and this is where the resistance come in on many levels, cultural and otherwise, changing what you eat, mm-hmm. right? People don't want to give up stuff, right? I heard a story a long time ago. So very woman used to work in the music industry. She happened to live in this building. And I heard that she was in a nursing home and she is a young, I'm like, nursing home? What do you mean she's in a nursing home? Well, she had diabetes. I didn't know that. And she'd had a toe amputation. And then as a result, she ended up in a nursing home. And I don't know, she may have been 55, 60 at the time.
Oh, wow.
And I was very surprised. And then her daughter was upset because people were bringing in contraband. Snickers, that's contraband for someone in a nursing home who just had an amputation of her toe.
Right.
Because one amputation begets another amputation. And I had a doctor speaking to my people. He's down in Mississippi helping save limbs, because let's say we all go to the doctor and we say, it seems like I have a lump in my breast. They say, really? Okay, I'm gonna order a mastectomy, okay? Nothing in between, no biopsies, or this is kind of the equivalent to what's going on in Mississippi. And this guy, when he went down there, he was livid. I happened to read an article on him in ProPublica. And so he deals with vascular, this, that, and the other. So he knows how to clean out the arteries and all of that to get the blood circulating to the parts that are struggling. And that can give you a chance to keep your toe, foot, leg. Because once they start amputating, on average, people live 5 years more than that. Mm-hmm. Think about that. 5 years? That's a scary statistic.
Right. I know that's very scary, but it's not always easy for people. You know, I had a friend. I loved him to death. I've known him since I was in the third grade. He was in the fourth grade. When he was 11 years old, he was stealing cigarettes from his mother. His mother found out that he was stealing cigarettes. So she told him, if you're going to smoke, you can't steal my cigarettes. You have to buy your own. And so from 11 years old till he was 32 when he passed away from cancer, when he was in a hospital on morphine, all he kept begging for and asking the doctors for was a cigarette. So he's dying and he has tubes in his arm and that's all he wants. So our behaviors, our addictive behaviors are also very hard to let go of. I wanted to go back to Allison real quick. Allison, I know we talked on one of the past shows, is that you're so much more than just an organizer. I don't even like when people use the word just, because you go into people's homes and you help them. You help them change their lives. One of the things that we discussed is you will find like liquor bottles and alcohol bottles hidden away, and you understand that it's more than just, okay, somebody put an alcohol bottle in a boot. You know, there are behaviors that go along with that. Am I correct, Allison?
Yes. I actually see a lot of secrets. I get secrets are revealed to me when I organize people's spaces. People are, you know, they're ashamed. It goes with their anxiety and having to deal with something, having someone that's an outside person come in. I do see a lot, and I gauge how open they are to change. I mean, they're open enough to have me come in and organize, but a lot of times they're not open enough and ready to deal with the root cause as to why they're anxious or why they're overwhelmed. So I have to kind of gauge their I guess, resistance or being open. Some people just are okay with their coping mechanisms. And so whatever happens at my client's house stays at their house.
Is that in your contract?
Well, no, it's what happens is a lot of the times is I get family members. Like I'll have one individual hire me, and then she will tell her mom, her cousin, her sister, her aunt. And then I go into that person's home to organize, and they want the dirt. They want to know, well, is their house, you know, what was it like? What did you organize over at their house? Excuse me. So I usually have to say, oh, I'm sorry, I can't tell you what happened at their house. I just went in and organized, and you know what happened at their house. Say, oh, it's okay, I'm her sister. Okay, mm-hmm. Well, you guys are such great sisters, then you should just go talk on the phone and know what happened. You know, like, mm-hmm. You know, I'm not gonna disclose, you know, their dirty laundry or anything along those lines. There's only been one instance where I did step in and contact another family member, and it was because of a hoarder situation where it was out of control on cleanliness. And so I only can do so much as a home organizer because I'm not a licensed therapist, and I'm not saying I am, and I'm not charging like one. And so with the hoarding happening and the uncleanliness, that's when I reached out to a family member and said, your sister needs help. I encourage finding some kind of after therapy for this organizing and whatnot. The equivalent of the sister telling me actually told me to kind of shut up and to not, that it's normal, that what her sister, what the hoarding is normal, and that it's not my place to care enough about the individual to tell them that, you know, they need help. So I was a little taken back a little bit, like, oh, okay, it's normal. I don't know what world you all live in, but it's not normal. Mm-hmm. So I actually had to step away from the whole situation and stop organizing and whatnot, because I did a stance that until you get some help, I'm not going to come over and organize, because I was just like a band-aid to allow more stuff to come in, because I was organizing it efficiently. And so once I saw that happening, I realized that I was enabling the hoarding to continue. And that's when I realized I wanted to focus my business not on getting more stuff into people's houses, but getting stuff out of people's houses. So then anytime someone goes, oh, I'm a hoarder, I go, oh, I'm going to put you on the bottom of my calendar. Because then I have to kind of put more time into it and be really watch the body language and look at the house and listen to the words that they're using. So if they say like, I'm overwhelmed, I'm like, okay, good. That's what I'm supposed to be here for. But I want to get more stuff in. I really like all this. I want more. Then I'm like, ooh, okay, I don't know if I can help you. Mm-hmm. So then I have to just kind of be aware of it. But back to the alcohol bottles, if I do see a trend where their closet is just full of like closet stuff, I usually, you know, kind of see how open they are to getting help. Do they need to be connected with someone? Do I need to take them to a meeting? You know, something along those lines. Sometimes usually I just can refer them to a website. And I have taken a few people, but it's only if they want. I don't push anything. If they get closed up and weird, I just change the subject real quick, and that way it's not awkward, you know. But they're not ready. If they were ready, they would be, you know, if they're ready, then we can go to the next step. But if they're not ready, then I just clam up and wait for the next opening.
When you say you go to the meetings, are these hoarder meetings? What kind of meetings are these?
No, for alcohol or...
Oh, okay. Or like drugs. AA meetings. Oh, that's right, interesting. So they're sitting in the... Go ahead.
Or codependency, financial. There's quite a few. There's a meeting kind of almost for anything. It kind of sounds like Fight Club a little bit, but there is a meeting out in our area and most of the US too. If you spend too much money, and it's not gambling, it's just spending too much money on Amazon and your credit cards. There's different financial it's like a program you can get into that helps you with your spending. There's codependency, there's eating, there's alcohol, there's drugs, there's sex. There's like the recovery program that I've been a part of. It isn't just addictions, it's behaviors too. And mm-hmm. So any of their behaviors trigger my little antennae of, oh, they might have behavior issues. They might be open to getting on a program. And so then I just tread very cautiously. I don't want to offend anyone. I don't want anyone to feel like I'm being judgmental. You know, I leave it, my questions open-ended to them. This went off on a tangent I wasn't expecting.
No, it's good. No, I love tangents. That's what I do. But it was just interesting when you said these meetings, whether they're AA or whatever, it's like, I can just imagine you sitting in the meeting with them and everybody's like, introduce yourself. And they introduce yourself. And it's like, hi, this is my organization, Maven. Like, she's here to make sure I'm organized. Like, it's just interesting, the whole dynamic. But I want to go back over to Marcy real quick. Because again, we're talking about behaviors, and one of the most difficult behaviors to kick is that sugar one. People, you know, I've seen the reports. I know the reports. I understand the reports where they tell you sugar is so many times more addictive than cocaine and crack and, you know, meth, you know, because there are so many ways to get sugar that, like you said, we don't realize. Were you able to get off of the spectrum of being a pre-diabetic? And what are some of the things that you did?
Well, one of the things, I have had to, first of all, recognize that carbs were a part of it. You know, again, sugar comes in different forms, and people think if you're not doing absolute table sugar, you know, that you're not eating sugar. even if you're doing a lot of fruit, you know, watermelon has a lot of sugar in it. It's natural, you know, and it may at times, it may metabolize slightly different, but it's still sugar, right? Mm-hmm. So I've been able to manage that, yes. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I've still been on the low side, but it has not gone up. I'm carrying about 10 extra pounds on my body right now. Weight has a part of it. You know, obesity is tied to type 2 diabetes. When you lose 10 pounds, it can make a difference in your blood sugar levels. So getting the 10 pounds off of my body will help. My blood sugar level has been fine. But I'll tell you what I discovered being back in Harlem. When I go and I see that I'm at a 5.8, the doctor's like, oh, or the nurse is like, are you kidding me? You know what the levels are in this neighborhood? That's not a good answer for me. You know what I mean?
Right. Because it's personal. It's not about the neighborhood. It's about your life at that moment.
Right. But it becomes acceptable. This is where we are affected so negatively, because then something that's not normal in another neighborhood becomes okay. Oh, you're the least. That's the least of your worries. You understand?
Right.
So we don't want people to view prediabetes like that, because again, neurologically, it's hard to change habits. Okay. We're wired to do things automatically. I'll give you a good example. My mom's keys are they're smaller, so I can put it in my fanny pack. Mine has a big old thing on it, you know. So I grab her keys and I walk out the door, and lo and behold, I have my keys in my hand, almost like magic, because I have a habit of taking my keys off of the ring in front of the door, despite the fact that literally seconds beforehand, I grabbed her keys. I still ended up with my keys a couple of times. Mm-hmm. It's the habit. Have you ever said, did I put on deodorant?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
That's weird. I do that. That's why I have a spare deodorant in my purse. Like, I'm like, I don't remember, but just in case, let me put a little more.
Now you know what I'm talking about. But I love what Allison, I want to kind of go back to something she was talking about. I have 30 plus years of sobriety.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I got sober in near Disneyland. What's the area called? There was a place called Open Quest there.
Okay.
It was a place called Open Quest there years ago. This is April 21st, 1990 is my date. And I've been to meetings. My life has been steeped, a good portion of my life, in Alcoholics Anonymous, Cocaine Anonymous, Narcotics Anonymous. And what I find, if you are an addictive personality, which I am, now that can translate itself in good ways. You know, we're the people who are passionate about what we do. So we can get stuff done that other people can't, because they don't even know how to get to that level of passion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but then that also means you're more likely to become a gambler, or become a coupon, obsessed with coupons, or become a fitness fanatic, because you're just going to replace that addiction with something else.
Why are you stealing my thunder, Allison?
Give her thunder back, Allison. Give Marcy back her thunder.
Okay, there you go. It's all back.
Yeah, she's absolutely right. It's called transferring addictions, right? Mm-hmm. So when I stop working my program, which means showing up at meetings routinely, that's how I got 10 years and 15 years. I was moving around the country and it got harder for me to keep going into meetings and introducing myself is what ended up happening, right? So, you know, I get away. I'm not drinking. I'm not thinking about any of that stuff at all, but I'm an addictive personality. Mm-hmm. I respond to life a little differently than other people do, right? We find solace in different things. And I discover, because I've attended Overeaters Anonymous, right? That's one thing that I've done, because I realized when I tried to make certain changes, there was this resistance, right? I used to smoke cigarettes, and I remember how hard it was. It was easy the first time. I put the little patch on. And I'm like, wow, 3 months later, it was so easy. I decided to smoke a cigarette again. Mm. And it kicked my butt trying to stop the next time. Mm-hmm. To do something that I don't want to do, you know, it was horrifying. because I was blessed to go into rehab and all of that other stuff. I spent 27 days in a rehab. I went across country to go into rehab. Then I went to a sober living place for two more months. Mm-hmm. And I loved Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, that was a place to be back then, you know what I mean? And so it was a whole nother world as I gravitated toward away from it, not working the programs because we're never cured. People don't like to hear that. They don't want to hear that, but it's a fact. And if you don't work a program, remembering the 12 steps, helping others, once you get help, you are obliged to be there to stick your hand out to welcome the next person, right? Because these diseases, they're not going away, right? So I transferred addiction and I discovered, because my mom is a sugar addict, has always been, I you know, it was normal for me to sit down as a kid and eat three candy bars. And that's when they were bigger and cost less.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I bring, you know, candy bars, ice cream, that was normal. And then she would have, my mom is always, she would eat stuff, but she was slower than I was. I'm like, blah, blah, blah. So she would have to put stuff away. She'd hide stuff from me because it would be gone. You know, the Girl Scout cookies. So food and sugar was actually my first addiction. And
I think I'm the same way.
Pardon me? That's,
no, I said, I think I'm the same way because it reminds me of my childhood. My mother, you know, we always went and got Thrifty's ice cream. We always had a lot of cookies and candies and pastries in the house. My mom, whenever we went out somewhere, we always had treats. So I learned later in life that I am an emotional eater and I would associate food with making me feel better. So just like I tell people before I launched the Roundtable Talk Show, I knew in my mind and in my head that I had to get my mind right. I had to get my body right. I had to make sure my spirit was right in order to be the host of the show and talk to other people. So I did a 7-day juice cleanse. I started drinking a whole lot of water. I was exercising. I was walking. I was meditating. Then COVID-19 hit. And I was at McDonald's ordering mocha frappes. I was like, I can't handle that stress, you know? But, you know, now I'm better. I'm working. I just started doing intermittent fasting again, just working on things. Yes. It's from my intermittent fasting is 6 p.m. to 6 a.m., you know? So I work on all these different things so that I am healthy. I'm 44 now. I don't want to be, you know, things that I have to start now is my point.
Can I mention, so you mentioned a couple of things. Intermittent fasting. So there's a book called The Diabetes Code, written by Jason Fung. If you go online, you'll see a host of different groups of people. He's a phenomenal doctor who used to treat type 2 diabetes in a traditional way. And clients were asking him, you know, well, didn't you say that losing weight will help my diabetes? But why are you giving me insulin, which has made me gain 20 pounds? And he couldn't answer these questions. Long story short, he does something called intensive dietary management, IDM. And it's a combination of keto diet with intermittent fasting. Mm-hmm. Another thing you hit on that I totally believe, and in fact, when I introduce the next set of classes, I'm going to have a spiritual track for anyone who wants to get on a Zoom call at 5:30 in the morning and pray.
East Coast time.
Yeah,
okay. I won't be there. That's a little too early for me.
She wakes up about 4 o'clock in the morning, California time. So 3:30, right. She's still snoozing.
There you go.
Lots of times she's waking up and I'm just going to bed.
So I personally believe there's a spiritual dimension to this. And that's, I mean, in actual fact, that's what they teach you in AA. You know, we admit we are powerless over whatever, that our lives have become unmanageable. Mm-hmm. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves can restore us to sanity. Mm-hmm. And then we make a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God, as you understand God, right? Mm-hmm. But A was actually created by, it was founded by Bill Wilson, Dr. Bob, but it was borrowed from the Oxford group. It's one of Bill Wilson ran into one of his drinking buddies, and he had, his eyes were crystal clear, and Bill offered him a drink, and he says, no, I've got religion, right? And it turns out that they were doing this little protocol of helping people get free of alcohol at the time. And that morphed into Alcoholics Anonymous. They added some other dimensions and so forth. So there is a spiritual side, and I think there's a spiritual side of the solution of getting free of these substances. Does anybody read the Bible here? Anybody familiar with scripture?
Right. I can't quote it verbatim, but I read it and I quote it. So,
okay. So,
to add something.
Go ahead, Allison.
Well, along the lines of the whole Christ, so I belong to one, I go to one that's called Celebrate Recovery, and it's actually a 12-step with following Christ, and they added 5 steps, or they intermingled 5 steps or something to that effect. And it's Celebrate Recovery is in various churches and different buildings, it depends, across the U.S. You can pretty much go to celebraterecovery.com and find a location close to you, and they cover the addicts and the behaviors, and they go through the 12 steps, and they bring it on how to bring you closer to God, and usually there's some kind of prayer at the beginning, and it's for Christian believers who wanted more than what AA gave. Some feel that AA is kind of generic in the God sense, that you can be any religion, and some people wanted to draw closer to God during this change and turmoil going on in our lives. So Celebrate Recovery did begin out here in Orange County, but they have locations all over the place. So that's what I attend, and I've been going for almost 8 years now.
Very interesting. Yeah, so that's good to know. I actually am a Seventh-day Adventist, and if you know anything about that movement, Ellen G. White, one of the founders, was big on health well over 100 years ago, and has written books like The Ministry of Healing, which it had to be divinely inspired. Some of the recommendations that are given in this book, she could not have known. She could not have known it, you know? It's very relevant now, and science is just finding it out. But anyways, back to the Bible. Food, the fall, you know, you can eat from 100 of these trees here, just don't eat from this one. The temptation came in the form of appetite, right? Esau, he sold his birthright for a bowl of porridge, stew, or whatever, you know, you want to call it, right? I hope you're not hearing the sirens, but I do apologize.
No apology, Mimi. We are, but we can still hear you. And the show must go on. So, I mean, I'm enjoying it. I can talk for a minute while it goes by, because you touched on the keto and I did keto. I actually lost 40 pounds on keto and gained 50. No, but I gained 50 pounds back. And because, yeah, you know, and I studied keto, one of the things they say is, and it doesn't rank very high, it's because it is not sustainable. You know, people, they recommend keto for, like, if you're trying to, you know, get into your bridesmaid dress, or you're trying to do something, look good for your high school reunion. Short term, it does very well. Like I said, I lost 40 pounds in a very short amount of time, but because of the way you eat and what you eat, it is not sustainable.
Oh, wait, see, I do paleo. I do paleo. And that one is more of a lifestyle change, where there's no fruit, there's no sugar, there's no grains, there's no dairy. So you're cutting out all the sugar, and you're trying not to spike your blood sugar by doing paleo. And I lost weight. But it took a long time to lose it. Like, I was with the program almost a year to lose the 30 pounds. And it took a month. And so for me, I felt that paleo was more of a lifestyle change and not a quick fix. Because in our area, the same thing as Sharifa said, that keto is encouraged if you're trying to lose weight quickly, like you're going to be in a wedding in 2 weeks and you want to fit into the bridesmaid dress. And so everyone, any of the moms groups, people go, I need to lose, you know, 10 pounds in 2 days. And everyone goes, keto, like everyone shouts it from the rooftops. And I'm like, paleo, because you want something long term.
Right. But you know what? I don't believe that's the case when it comes to what Jason Fung is doing. I don't think that's the case. I know that the intermittent fasting is a huge part of what he's doing. And literally, people who have been on insulin for a decade or so have been freed from that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
No, I agree with you. Which is why out of everything that I learned when I started keto, because it was a process. You know, you change your eating, you change your water, you change your, and you add intermittent fasting. The intermittent fasting is the only part that I'm taking on, and the water right now, because the other things, I know it's not going to be, you know, long term.
So I don't know enough about keto, but I want to get back to the, so no one's confused on this call. The diabetes prevention program is about changing lifestyles. It's a 22 class program. We do 16 weeks, 1 hour back to back. And then we go, that's the core phase of the program where you are looking at your food. You're looking at moving more. Everyone can't go to the gym and all of that, but we include when you're cleaning up your house. I mean, what Allison does takes energy, lifting boxes and all of that. So we include movement, you know, get active. And people each week, we take the weight and we take how many minutes were you active this week? And so those are the components. So there's accountability and support. Then we do 6 months of meeting once a month. Now that's where I added a show like this. I've had speakers come in. I've done that so that I could keep my people engaged now that both of my cohorts are in maintenance phase, right? And they've loved it. They have loved the speakers. They've kept on point. And I've invited anyone who wants to keep sending me their weight and activity log each week are welcome to do that. So a couple of people have gotten really wonderful results, about 4 people, and it is over a year's time. Like Allison said, it's about making small changes in what you do. Like one young lady, I said, logging of the food is crucial because when I first started to log, first of all, it starts to put pressure on you because certain things you don't want to see yourself written down, right? So you start making changes right away. Oh no, I'm logging now. I have to really see this. You don't realize how much you're eating. People don't realize how much she said, I had no idea. I'm eating good stuff, right? Like I became a vegetarian, one piece of chocolate away from being vegan, right? But carbs, you start to eat more carbs when you take out the meat, and that's not what you need to do. You need to eat more vegetables, which some of it are carbs, but they're the complex carbs, right? So anyways, she started to log and she realized, man, she lost weight like this. She hadn't been able to lose weight in a while. By logging, she saw, I am eating a lot of food. And she was able to make that adjustment. Not to a starvation mode, but from a minute, we're eating too much.
Yes, the serving size.
Too much food.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Understand?
And God forbid you are an emotional eater. And I saw that I started to look at the behaviors as Allison talked about. I found myself like, you know, as an entrepreneur, you know, there's urgency to what we're doing. I'm working with people who are on salaries. There's no urgency in, you know, in my business for them, right? They're getting paid regardless.
Right.
Those are hard dynamics. And so, you know, you get a little frustrated. I'm in front of the cabin. I'm like, why am I here?
Right.
I'm not even hungry, but I'm reaching for a good snack. But if you reach for nuts five times, it's no longer a good snack.
Right, right.
Also, absolutely. You can, well, do you encourage people to put the feelings chart up on the refrigerator so they can choose their feeling before they open the fridge? I've seen that being a good thing where if people are bored or stressed out, they can pick whatever they are, and then they have to, and then it says what to do instead of eating if they do those things.
That sounds like a good idea. That sounds like a good method. I've added one thing that the CDC wants is for us to do their protocol. Mm-hmm. It's laid out. Mm-hmm. Now there are extra dimensions, like when I bring speakers in, people get to hear more. I share my experience with mm-hmm. people. And mm-hmm. as a result, a couple of people have started going to Overeaters Anonymous mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. they recognized I might need something more, right?
Right.
So, but no, that's not something I've done. The CDC has a laid out program. I've almost finished going through the first two cohorts. I can submit my own program or version and get it approved. And I will do that probably in 2021 because there are some things that culturally need to be in this. Like trying to do the program during COVID-19 was hilarious. Right. I mean, I was off script so much because we were dealing with people dying all around us like flies.
Right.
And you have to give people passes. They got to cope whichever way they can in a pandemic. Yes. Has that kind of experience, right?
Right. Absolutely. That's that emotional eater. You need something to feel better, but you just have to wash different ways. I remember I learned two things from my personal trainer I had years ago. And one of the things that he taught me to do was to look at the portion size, the serving size on a package. And I wasn't even looking at that. You know, I just grab it because it's a certain size. I just eat the size. It is what it is, as opposed to looking at it and saying, this package has six serving sizes. You know, and the funniest thing out of all of that, which surprised me, is he had me eating rice cakes, right? And so I just wanted to eat the rice cakes. He's like, no, Sharifa, you get one rice cake. I'm like, a day? Like, I don't want, you know, but one rice cake is one serving. And I'm like, you know what I mean? I usually would eat like three or four. They're rice cakes. Like, no. But then he took me shopping. And he said, I want you to shop normal, like how you would normally shop. And then, so I wasn't walking. He was like, just shop. I was like, well, can you walk back there? Like, go some feet away so I don't feel watching me shop. But every time I would put something in a basket, he would come up and we would read it and he would tell me all the sugars. So it was a learning experience that opened my eyes in a way that I wouldn't have been able to do by myself because I had no idea. What, you know, orange juice, he took my orange juice away because of the amount of sugar they have.
Sugar.
So it's a lot of different things. I'm digressing today. We have 2 minutes. I am coming down. I've enjoyed this show. Ma'am. Yes. And we have 2 minutes left in the show. And what
I'm
love
coming to back Sharifa one day. I am.
Well, go to AskSharifa.com today. I will. I'd love for you to come back. We talked about so much. We have so much more to talk about. But go to AskSharifa.com today. Schedule be a guest, even if it's for sometime in October, because days fill up. But what I love to do at the end of every show is just simply allow my guests the opportunity to speak directly to the audience, to everyone who is watching this show live, as well as everyone who is watching it in the archives, and simply let them know what you want them to take away from your appearance here today. And we're going to start with you, Allison.
So I really encourage all of our watchers to put that they're watching us on the replay or they're, you know, now that we're no longer going to be live in a few seconds. Anyways, people can find me online through the organization Maven. I'm on like 15 different social media platforms. So if you go into Google and just put the organization Maven, whatever social media you like to be on, I will be there and you can follow me and see my she cave and and see what's happening, and I'll see you all next week.
See you Monday. Marcy, what do you have for us?
Basically, if you can go to joinplanglobal.com, I am launching the next diabetes prevention program online September 10th. We have an information/orientation session. The prior, the week before, on September 3rd, where you can come and ask all different questions. We'll go over how the program goes. If you've already registered, it'll be orientation. If you're looking to hear more, it'll be an information session. Joinplanglobal.com. Thank you for having me, Sharifa. I appreciate it, and I've enjoyed this show tremendously.
You are so welcome. Thank you for being here. I'm going to go ahead and check out that website as well. I want to thank you, thank my guests for joining me, but I also want to thank everyone who tuned in to watch the show live. I definitely appreciate your support. Everyone who's watching this show in the archives, I appreciate you as well. And if you're watching this show, please go ahead and share the show. The information that we shared today could help someone. It could save their lives. It could change their lives. And you being a good friend, that's what you want to do. So share the show. Don't just share the show. Don't just watch the show. Be a part of the show. Join the conversation. Be a guest. Visit the website at asksharifa.com. Until tomorrow at 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, everyone have a safe and a blessed day. Bye now.
Bye.